Hope your Monday's off to a good start. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you, hanging out on a Monday. Hope your 4th of July holiday weekend was well and safe. I know, Junior, you were working at one of the things that has been one of your favorite events as long as you've been watching things on television.
Calling the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest this weekend, Trey. Check that one off the bucket list. Obviously, different circumstances this year.
Sure.
Indoor, not on the corner of Surf and Still in Coney Island where it normally is. We were in the Major League Eating Bubble Eat Island as I started dubbing it in there.
The plexiglass, it took away, the splash zone was not what the splash zone normally is.
I was
for
say,
all the right reasons.
Thankfully this year, although I was bummed, Jason Fitz, who is, you know, our colleague here, was our sideline analyst for Rich Shea, who's the president of Major League Eating, was the analyst. And I desperately wanted, like, I had this vision in my head of hot dog bits just landing on Fitz and him puking right in front of a stage full of competitive eaters, because I know Jason's queasy enough to do that.
Well, listen, we were hopeful we can get back to a place in this country where we will see Jason Fitz vomit from other people's vomit. I mean, that's the goal we're all working for, right?
Only in America can we come to this point. But yeah, it was a blast. I mean, as much as people, like, I know a lot of people are critical anytime we compare it, but these people put a lot of time into it. Like, it is, like, I very much consider it a sport. Like, you're doing it competitively. You're putting your time and life into it. But at the very least, being back around an event like that, that was live, it's like we talked about with the draft.
Right.
Like, just getting to do it around a live event like that, and one that's certainly as much fun as that one is, seeing two record-breaking performances for Mickey Sudo and Joey Chestnut. It was awesome.
It's just such a rush to be around something like that. And you know, hopefully we'll continue to have more of those things. But as we're getting the close to bubble situations and sports returning, we're still seeing a lot of positive tests and teams having to shut down their facilities, including one in the NBA that has a really, really good chance of winning the whole damn thing should they actually play. So we'll get into that a little bit. But obviously a big part of the discussion over the weekend was the news that broke Friday, is that the Washington NFL franchise is going through a massive internal review to look at the name. And you know what that means. They're not doing this with the idea of not doing it. We all believe that Daniel Snyder, who has used the word never 1,000 times over about changing the name, is finally going to succumb to both social and, more importantly, financial pressure to potentially change the name of the team.
Let nothing stand as a monument to the power of people's voices more than being able to change Dan bleeping Snyder's mind.
Exactly right. And it's the power of the people's voices which is leading to the power of the power brokers in terms of money, which is leading to this. Because let's not kid ourselves about this. We all like the idea to think, hey, we're doing this from a moral perspective, and we believe that this is a different time and we've changed how we think as a country, and that's true, but none of that matters if it wasn't backed by the dollars behind this, because FedEx owns the rights, the naming rights to the stadium. Nike has essentially taken the Washington football franchise off their list of teams available on their website. They list all 31 teams and not Washington. That's money. And money is backing this, and money is moving this, and that's what we call capitalism, my friends.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't get to claim morality while you're being held at gunpoint. That's essentially
correct.
What this is for Daniel Snyder. And so we've seen a bunch of interesting things happen. Obviously, for them now, we're hearing that a smaller group of their ownership, minority ownership, 40% of their stakeholders are looking at potentially as three men that ultimately make up the 40% share of the ownership group for Washington that are looking into moving and selling their shares in all this. We don't know if that's a threat. We don't know if that's a convenient out amidst these uncertain times, but we know it's being reported. So it's yet another thing that might be leading towards this move happening sooner than later.
Right. So then the question becomes, well, what should they do? And there's been a lot of interesting discussion about that over the weekend, including Crystal Echo Hawk, the founder and executive director of Illuminative, was on Sunday morning on ESPN Radio. And after having these discussions, these internal discussions, as the Redskins put out in their statement on Friday, Crystal Echo Hawk basically says, well, wait a minute. If we're having these discussions, they include potentially somehow using a name that honors Native Americans. Native Americans need to be at the table.
It's absolutely imperative. And they talk about this review, but there needs to be transparency in this review. There absolutely needs to be a working group of Native American experts and the people that have been leading this movement for decades. You need to have a diverse coalition of Native leaders at the table with the team and the league, because not only does there need to be a full rebrand, right, and do there needs to be a transparent process around all of this, but I believe there truly needs to be an apology and a real genuine apology from the team and the league, because they have silenced and disregarded Native people for decades on this. And if they really want to do this right, if they really want to stand true to standing up against racism and doing what's right, then everything from this review process on needs to be done in the right way. And that is making sure that Native people are at the table and it's a transparent process.
Go Look and Wingo's brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Straight Talk Wireless runs on the same networks for up to 50% less. Get the unlimited plan, 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month. No contract, Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. And I think that's something that you want to talk about seeing like true change, right, if that process, because that's what we always ask for, especially now, is transparency and representation. The problem is the NFL's past with this hasn't been great. Remember, after everything happened with Ray Rice and the NFL brought in all these women to be a part of their process going forward, and essentially what we found out over time was didn't really listen to any of the experts they had, any of the women that were brought on board to help them revamp this policy and be better about it going forward. So, as with a lot of things, the NFL and the teams that are a part of it have to do a lot more showing and doing before we're going to really be able to believe the sincerity of this kind of stuff.
Well, not only that, but is this just the tipping point of an iceberg? Is this the beginning here? Because this could lead to a massive amount of changes, if we're honest about it, across all sports landscapes and all other teams that have some sort of affiliation with Native Americans. And take, for example, none other than our good friend Terry Francona, who is the manager of the Indians. And he basically said he's no longer going to sidestep the subject of Cleveland's name or mascot, thinking, quote, "I know in the past when I've been asked about it, whether or not it's our name or the Chief Wahoo, I think I would usually answer and say, I know that we're never trying to be disrespectful." And then he added, "And I still feel that way, but I don't think that's a good enough answer today. I think it's time to move forward. It's a very difficult subject. It's also delicate." And the Indians have also said, "We are starting to look at the process, or we are starting to look at it internally about the name of our franchise as well."
It is going to be very interesting now who decides to get out ahead of this, right? And even at this point, I can't even claim that you're ahead of it right now. But we've seen the Braves in Atlanta basically come out and go, "Nah, we're good on all of this up until now." But Crystal Echo Hawk again was on this weekend and said that she believes that Native Americans as a mascot in general needs to be a thing of the past.
Yep.
We just think no Native mascots, period. I mean, I think this racialized imagery, you know, racialized mascots, no, absolutely not. There's no way to honor Native peoples with a Native mascot. It can't be done. It cannot really be done in a good way. These Native mascots and all their different manifestations, it's not just relegated to the Washington team, but it's across the board, really do cause psychological harm to Native American children. And they do, on the flip side, really feel bias amongst non-Native people, right? It has a way to dehumanize Native people. And I just think the best thing to do is to just eliminate all Native mascots.
And again, I think every team's going to have the discussion for themselves, where we're talking about the Chicago Blackhawks, the current Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs, the Florida State Seminoles. I mean, all those things. You know, Junior, I was on a radio station Saturday in Toronto, and someone asked me the question, "Well, where is the line? You know, where do we stop?" And to me, the answer is, I have no idea. And I don't think I'm supposed to know the answer to that. You know, I kind of reject the argument of like, well, if we do this, then that has to happen. And that's, well, maybe. But I mean, I don't think you and I are qualified to make those decisions. I think those decisions have to be made by the people, if you listen to them, who are really offended by some of these things.
Yeah, a lot of people take this to the eventuality of, well, are you erasing history? Which no one's asking you to do. I don't know how many times it can be said in all of this. We're not burning books and we're not going back and erasing history. We're trying to, I think, finally reveal a more accurate, all-encompassing version of it, one that involves a lot of people, and in the process, stop celebrating things that clearly make groups of people uncomfortable. Like, you're right, we're not qualified to do it, and so going forward, instead of in the past being like, well, according to this poll, hey, Native American people, you guys are cool with the name of the Washington football team, right? Does it honor you or does it not? And presenting it like that, or just asking, hey, asking the Native American population, what is a way that you would feel honored right. in all of this? Do you really need a sports team named after you to feel like that? Is that something anyone's comfortable with? Maybe that's the way you start asking the question in all this, as opposed to just dictating the terms and assuming, oh, yeah, you know, that group of people that I haven't really consulted or doesn't have any representation in this process, they're in on it. They're cool.
Yeah, and the other part, you know, well, where do you stop? I don't know. I don't know where you stop.
Like, no one is, we're going to be able to look back in the history of the Washington football team and see that this was the name for a long time and see the things associated with it. But Brian Mitchell said, things like this to me are like, the names of sports teams, that those are cosmetic changes. Brian Mitchell said before, he brought up a poll on his show, do you support the team, the organization, or do you just support the name? Like, your memories are going to be tied to, I would imagine, the coaches, players, and events that were part of the team's history. And the name was there along for the ride. It was an identifier. And you know what? You can find a new one, because there are enough parts about being a fan of the Washington football team that have nothing to do with the name that I have a feeling you'll all still be able to find each other at the tailgate. Right. You'll all still know where to go when the games finally start again and you can be there and you'll know how to identify each other in public. That much I can probably count on at this point.
Well, we do root for laundry in a lot of ways for sports. I mean, like, Wade Boggs was a Red Sox for so many years, then he won a championship with the Yankees. Oh, well, we're cool with Wade Boggs. Roger Clemens, same way. He was that dreaded pitcher in Boston. Oh, he's wearing that uniform now? We're good with it. We root for laundry.
Yeah, and it'll still be burgundy and gold, too.
Correct.
You'll be good.
Yeah, and again, we had Brian Mitchell on earlier. He also said, I brought this up with him, if you've stuck through with the team for all the crappy years that you've had, and now this is when you're going to leave? Yeah, I don't buy it. All right, coming up next, the golf nerd has become the strong nerd, and the results came through over the weekend. We'll talk about the beef hammer when we come back after this.
After this word from Pennzoil, not all motor oils are created the same. Motor oil made from crude oil contains impurities, but Pennzoil synthetic motor oils, they're made from natural gas. Its base oil is 99.5% free from impurities. It gives you unbeatable engine protection, so the next time you get an oil change, ask for Pennzoil. The proof is in the Pennzoil based on Sequence 4 wear testing using SAE 30. Does golf have a big bad boy? Back after this. Go look and Wingo. Go look and Wingo here on ESPN Radio. Time to get you caught up on a little bit of what is trending. The NHL and the NHLPA have finalized protocols for their return in Edmonton and Toronto. Sorry, Trey. I know you were holding out hope for Vancouver.
Well, you know, Emily Kaplan sort of burst my bubble last week when she said Vancouver was like, yeah, we're not doing this. So that pretty much ended it. But that being said, Toronto is a beautiful city. And Edmonton apparently has a great little park area where they can do all this stuff. So apparently Edmonton's moving up in the world.
Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly confirmed the news to ESPN. As of Sunday night, the sides are still finalizing the details for a memorandum of understanding for a CBA extension. Sources told our own Emily Kaplan that the NHL is targeting July 13th as a start date for training camps. And if all goes according to plan, the teams will travel to the hub cities on July 25th or 26th, and games will begin by August 1st. The Eastern Conference teams will play in Toronto, while the Western Conference teams will be in Edmonton. Meanwhile, the Yankees' Masahiro Tanaka has a mild concussion. Manager Aaron Boone said on Sunday that Tanaka had a regular appetite, regular sleep, and most of his concussion-like symptoms had actually dissipated. Tanaka was taken and released from a hospital on Saturday after getting drilled in the right side of the head by a Giancarlo Stanton live drive. So thankfully, obviously, a concussion still nothing to shake a stick at, but thankfully wasn't a lot worse. And Bryson DeChambeau won the Rocket Mortgage Classic by three shots this weekend. The big golfer, as Spencer Hall has dubbed him, shot a 7-under-65 at the Detroit Golf Club, birdieing four of the first seven holes and closing with three straight. He finished with a career-best 23-under-265. It was the first victory of the season and sixth overall. He quickly erased final round leader Matthew Wolff's three-shot lead to start the day on the front nine, but needed three straight closing birdies to seal that victory in their duel on the back nine. 21-year-old Wolff was trying to become the youngest two-time winner on the tour since Tiger Woods back in 1996. He birdied four of his final six holes to shoot a 71. What's Trending is brought to you by Redbox. Redbox has the top entertainment when you need it most. Don't miss Impractical Jokers, the movie. Four comedians go on a cross-country road trip with hilarious hidden camera pranks. Visit Redbox.com for all the ways to watch.
All right, Golic and Wingo here with you, and we need to talk a little bit about what Bryson DeChambeau, the beef hammer, Jack Thickness, you know, Phil Thickelson, whatever you want to call him. What he's doing to the game of golf right now, it's absolutely remarkable. Our PGA Tour Twitter account put this out. This was the list of the longest drives. Did you saw this, right? This was the list of the longest drives of the week for Bryson DeChambeau. 377 yards, 376, 374, 367, 366, 365, 364, 363, 362, 355, 355, 355, 355, 354, 353, 352, 348, 348, 346, 345, 344.
I like the idea of you calling it 364.
Thank you, 364. I mean, when 344 is like your 21st longest drive of the week, my God, you are just obliterating golf courses. And understand that people know that's what's happening. Kevin Kisner, who, by the way, finished solo third in this event, basically summed it up. He's changed the way the game is played entirely, he told CBS after the Rocket Mortgage Classic, which he won in Detroit, which is basically, I'm just going to obliterate the golf ball and get as close as I can and have a wedge in there. Now, look, he has not won every week he's been back on tour, but he's been there in contention every week for the 4 weeks they've been back on tour.
We have started this, and his name has constantly been in people's mouths. And he talked about this after, on a Zoom call, conference call they were on the possibility of this being a trend that other players might follow.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I think that the most important thing is that I've shown people that there's another way to do it, and there's going to be other people trying to come up and do it that way. Whether it translates on the PGA Tour, I don't think so. I think guys are going to play their game. They're going to keep doing what they're doing, try and utilize their biggest tools in their tool bag to play their best golf. And so, you know, for me, I think there are going to be people trying to hit a little harder, some of them. But at the end of the day, it's going to take a generation for this to all evolve into something different. I really think that there's going to be a lot more players down the road try and hit it as far as they possibly can, and it's straight.
Bryson DeChambeau getting big and apparently reinventing golf is proof that you can help me win tournaments. Proof is brought to you by Pennzoil. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas, gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil based on sequence 4 wear testing using SAE 5W30. I laugh hysterically at the notion that Bryson DeChambeau thinks he has invented the idea of, man, hitting the ball really far and straight is good.
Yeah.
Hitting ball far and straight, good.
Frank and Golfer, you did not come up with this. You came up with a different way to do it, which is really interesting.
Yes, obviously that portion of this, but so there's also this that came up with Bryson over the weekend. And this is what I want to ask you about, Trey, because you're much more of a tried and true, true blue golf fan than I am, who, like, I enjoy the spectacle of this, and I enjoy people that want to do things differently. Bryson had a moment this weekend.
He had a moment.
So he was on 7, and he got a little hot coming out of the sand, basically splashing his club down.
Right.
Kind of acting a fool there, muttered an expletive after missing a par save about 60 seconds later, and overall just was pretty fired up there in a way that might not be the best look. Well, there was a camera following him right after, essentially up to the next tee box, was up close and personal with him, that he took umbrage with, ended up confronting the cameraman, actually, on the next hole. And when he was asked about it after, he made these comments to Will Gray of the Golf Channel. He said, quote, he was literally watching me the whole time, the entire way up after getting out of the bunker, walking up to the next green. And I was like, sir, what is the need to watch me that long? I mean, I understand it's his job to video me, but at the same point, I think we need to start protecting our players out here compared to showing a potential vulnerability and hurting someone's image. I just don't think that it's necessarily the right thing to do.
Okay,
does he hear the words?
No, he doesn't. Because here's the deal. You're basically saying to a cameraman, don't be a cameraman. That's essentially what he said. Hey, don't do your job.
It's your job to not do your job so that I don't get caught acting a way that I cannot act.
Correct.
Like, as contrived, like, Bryson DeChambeau wants this dude to cover up the fact that Bryson thought he looked like a jerk in that moment, and he doesn't think that getting out is good for his brand. If you don't think that, don't do that. Like, that's the simple solution here, dude.
And that's the other part with Bryson. This is really interesting because people have taken umbrage with him for a bunch of other things. For example, he's slow. You can say whatever you want. He's deliberate. He's purple. No, he takes too much time over a lot of his shots. Like, on Sunday, he hit a drive on, I think it was 13. He's trying to drive the green at 393 yards. By the way, flex if you can.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you can do it.
Respect. But, you know,
he just hit a hole-in-one on a par four.
Exactly. I mean, he hooked it a little bit into the... So he literally walked up to the green from where his ball was from like 40 yards and then walked back. And he does this all the time. He has been accused of being very deliberate and basically playing slow a long time. And he took a lot of... He took umbrage to that. He was very upset that people would call him that. But then another, he took 7 minutes over something. Look, He's different in a lot of ways that I think is actually good for golf.
I was going to say, do you think, because it seems like he's kind of leaned into being the bad guy a little bit. It seems to come kind of naturally. And I wondered, and I wanted to ask you, like, is that good? Does golf need one?
Yes, for a couple of reasons. One, because he swings, as we said, like the fifth man at a scramble. Okay, you guys are all in the fairway. We're safe. Good. I'm just going to swing out of my bleep and hope I pull something in my lower lumbar region. And it's working. So on that sense, it's very much in the same way that John Daly became a phenomenon. Because grip it and rip it, you beer-chugging, cigarette-smoking, fast-food-eating guy. You're just like the rest of us with your mullet. You don't care about this fancy rules in golf. It is going to attract a lot of people to watch the freak show that wouldn't necessarily watch the freak show. Because if we know nothing else about golf, it can be a very cookie-cutter sport where everybody looks the same, acts the same, dresses the same, and plays the same. So when someone comes up and shakes up that dynamic in a way that Bryson DeChambeau is doing it visually, that people can see with his body, and then visually with the yardages that we just talked about, including 363, which, thank you for catching me on that, is going to attract a lot of eyeballs. And golf is great when they have contrasting things. Take, for example, Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, right? Tiger was the most dominant bleeper of all time, and he enjoyed being the most dominant bleeper of all time. Like they would say, when Ken Venturi was still doing golf on CBS, and you know Tiger was out there, and you know he said that one second sucks and third is worst, and you know, so he's like first or that's it. And you know Curtis Strange famously said, "You'll learn," and no, we all learned that no, what he was doing, that was going to work, and that was the way it was going to be. And Ken Venturi once asked him, so it's basically just step on their neck. He's like, yeah, pretty much. And it got people's attention. He also happened to be the greatest golfer that ever played.
That helps.
Which was a good part of it, but there was a contrast between the way he went about it and sometimes the way Phil went about it. And that dynamic is good for golf. We can have a bunch of Ricky Fowlers and a bunch of Jordan Spieths, these guys that are really great and they're nice guys.
And they all get along with each other.
And they all get along. It's okay to have someone to be an antagonist. And he is the golf antagonist right now. In a lot of ways, that's upsetting the people inside the sport, but it's also making people very curious to tune into the sport and see, what is this freak show doing right now? And I think he and golf should lean into this right now. Lean into it.
He should. And complaining about a camera capturing that because you want to put out videos on your Instagram that are tailored to make you look great are all fine and good, but like, this is the reality of it. And if you're going to be that guy, don't run and hide from being that guy. This is a class example. You can get muscles and still not be big.
Right.
Like, he is operating like a small person that just got big for the first time. We've all seen it. You come back from a summer, you've been chugging protein shakes after every meal, and you're big and feel good, and you still haven't quite learned how to live in that persona. And it's understandable because you're new here, and you were the golf nerd before, and now you're the big golf nerd here.
Right.
And it's a great place to be. I hope he gets comfortable with it because, like you said, that bit of disruption I think is only going to make this more fun for all of us, because that's the other part. It's not like Happy Gilmore just winning long drive contests.
No.
It's like when he started winning on the tour. Like, all of a sudden, if he keeps turning these top 10 finishes into wins like this, that's all the more uncomfortable for everybody, because there's nothing worse than having to reconcile with the guy you don't like necessarily also being good.
Yeah, that'll drive people crazy. And people can say, oh, who is it? No. He's won six times on tour already. I think he's only, what, 25, 26?
26.
He's 26 years old. He's won six times on tour, and he's won at least once in four straight years. That's the sign of a guy who's not going away. He's not a sideshow. He's going to be a part of this discussion for a long, long time. And we still have three major championships to be played this year. The Open Championship, otherwise known as the British Open, is not going to be played this year. But there are going to be three times in majors that we believe he's going to go up there and grip it and rip it. And you're going to have to deal with all of his junk. And at the end of the day, that's good for a sport that is sometimes far too cookie cutter. And we'll see what happens with that going forward. Meanwhile, Cam Newton is putting out sweaty Instagram videos again, and he looks prime for his chance with the Patriots. We'll talk to someone who's pretty familiar with that culture in New England after SportsCenter. Well, he is a former NFL MVP, so yeah, that would make the sense over a guy who's never had a start in his career yet in Jared Stidham, but you know, we'll see what happens. Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, including our next guest, join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And that is our NFL analyst and longtime member of the New England Patriots, Rob Ninkovich. Ninko, thanks for being with us. Hope you had a healthy and safe 4th of July. Before we get into bigger picture things with the NFL, is Cam Newton signing for pennies on the dollar? It's the most Bill Belichick thing ever, right?
It's a win-win situation. I mean, it's a win for the Patriots. They get a guy that potentially could have a great football season, former MVP, if he can get out there and get back to his old form. It's good for him, and it's good for the Patriots. So that's a Bill Belichick move right there. Get a guy at a great value that's on a mission.
And Rob, I guess I'm curious. They've operated one way for so long with Tom Brady. How do you think Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick adjust their offense to fit the skills of Cam Newton and what he does best?
Well, good coaches, they adjust with their schemes and what they want to do based on the personnel that they have on the roster. So, you know, they're having a quarterback that can move a little bit, a guy that we know can run the football with success. So, you know, I'm sure they're licking their chops in the low red zone close to the goal line. They got an extra guy on the field that can run the football, kind of like a Lamar Jackson type, where the 11 guys on the field, it's 11 on 11 football, not 10 on 11, usually when you have a quarterback that can't run.
So with that in mind, we'll get back to the Patriots in a minute, but Nico, I want to talk about what the overall feeling is in the NFL. The NFL announced we're going to have two preseason games. The NFLPA has basically said, hey, we should have zero preseason games. As a veteran who's been around for a while, you're probably like, why couldn't we have done this years ago, have no preseason games? If you had to bet an uncomfortable amount of money and the options are two preseason games or zero preseason games in the summer of COVID-19, where would you bet your money?
I'm betting it towards the zero because we've seen these cases respike, and you know the NFL owners want to have a football season. So if they get out there in the preseason and things start to go the opposite way, they go downhill, then that could affect the regular season. So, you know, I'm on the side of they're going to try and be as cautious as possible and get guys into the regular season before they risk having to shut things down if things go in the wrong direction.
Yeah, Rob, I'm always curious, what did you feel like you needed to be ready? Because this year it's going to be a much different schedule than usual, but just in general, going to training camp, I remember hearing a lot of vets say they basically were just trying to get to the regular season. Did you need a certain amount of reps or a certain amount of looks before like you felt like you were ready to play regular season football?
Well, look, if you're on a Bill Belichick team, you've had a lot of reps before your first preseason game just based on practices and all the things that you do in the offseason, OTAs, minicamp. So this year, not having any of that, I feel like you definitely need to be out there getting reps. I mean, you think about some of these teams, if you're a new head coach and you haven't had any time with your team and you haven't had any time speaking to your team to try and get guys on the same page, that's going to be difficult. So, you know, teams that have been together, they're going to have the upper hand. If you have a coach that's been there, a veteran team that has been there, they're going to have the upper hand for sure. So, As a veteran, you really don't need the preseason. You don't need the preseason, but it's nice to get out there and see some things at game speed, because it doesn't matter how much you practice. When you get on the field in a game situation, things just move a little bit quicker than in practice.
Absolutely. Troy Aikman used to always talk about that when he'd bring in rookies and they go through preseason and things were working. He said, understand it's going to be a lot faster in the NFL than you're seeing right now during this basically warm-up period. But with that in mind, Nico, I had one player text me last week, an active player, when I asked him, do you think we'll have the season go off? He says, I think we'll get together on time in training camps, and then when we're all together, who knows, hell could break loose. Because there's no way you can do any of the things you're supposed to do in a pandemic and play football. Those two things are incongruous points. So what are you expecting to happen when you get, say, because it's not going to be 90 guys this year. Say it's 75, 80, 80 guys together in a training camp scenario. I mean, there's no way to avoid doing the things that you're not supposed to be doing.
Yeah, well, there's more question marks than there are answers at this point. And look, you can think back on any NFL film in December where it's cold and guys are, their hot breath is going back and forth across the line of scrimmage. I mean, that's happening when it's the summer. You just don't see the hot breath. So if a guy has it, you know, unfortunately, what are your chances of spreading it in a team situation, especially football, where you got snot and spit flying everywhere? You know, I just think that it's going to be difficult. I'm not going to say it's impossible because, look, I mean, you start to – if you're too negative on this thing, then your thoughts go the wrong way. I think I'm trying to be positive and think that with the correct steps and guys being careful and smart, that hopefully, you know, things can go well for this season. And I think it's just going to have to be guys being smart, practicing social distancing with it, when you're not on the football field, because it's hard to do that when you're on the football field, right? But I'm saying making the right choices when you're away from the football field, wearing your mask, doing everything that they're telling you to do to prevent yourself from getting or spreading this virus.
Ningo, with that being said, was it the least surprising thing in the world to see, even after the NFL's doctors came out and said, hey, players maybe don't work out together leading up to training camp, that Tom Brady was among the quarterbacks leading his entire team in a workout on a field?
Well, it's not surprising that Tom would want to get those guys together, because he's the ultimate competitor and he doesn't want to be behind the ball, so to speak. So, it's going to be really hard for a quarterback and receiver to be on the same page if they can't run a route together. That's going to be the biggest challenge for some of these teams that have had new faces across the board, coordinators, quarterbacks, head coaches. I mean, it's going to be difficult. So we're going to find out sooner than later how this thing is going to work out as far as chemistry and timing. Who knows? It might be a great year for defense, right?
Listen, a lot of defenders would be like, thank God, give us 1 year. We'll take it no matter what the circumstances are that give it to us. But with that in mind, Nico, I'm going to put you in the impossible situation that no one wants to be put in. But, perfect. I feel like I'm going to do it anyway. Thank you. Yeah, it's my gift to you. More likely to win the division, Brady in the NFC South with new team and having different restrictions, or Cam Newton in New England with the Belichickian and the Josh McDaniels train already fully established?
Well, NFC South, you look at that division, that's a pretty tough road. You look at the teams in that division, the Saints are not an easy team to just walk through. Atlanta, I think they're a team bouncing back in the right direction. Carolina, they're always tough to play in those in-division games. So I'm going to think that now with the new addition of Cam and the challenges that he's going to bring to different teams, I think the Patriots in their division, you look at Buffalo, that's pretty much the biggest competition for them this year. I mean, we know we got the Jets, but I just don't see the Jets being as competitive this year as the Buffalo Bills will be. I'm thinking that the Patriots, if this whole Cam Newton thing works out great, I think that they're going to have the upper hand and win the division.
Headline, Brady's former teammate says he will fail in Tampa. Just kidding, Rob. Just kidding.
Tampa's, that's a tough division. He's got a great football team. I think Tom's going to have a heck of a year. But I just think that the odds of – I think both teams can get into the playoffs. I really do. But I think that the division – for the Patriots is a weaker division.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. All right, Nico, we appreciate your time this morning. Hope you had a good fourth. We'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, thanks, guys. Take care.
Yeah.
I think that's an easy question. Like the Saints are a markedly tougher opponent than the Bills are when it comes to that division, just because we still have questions about, A, what goes on with the Bills at quarterback.
Correct.
I know Josh Allen has progressed well in all of this, but it's exactly what he said. Like, I don't think that's a hot take.
No, it isn't. I just wanted to throw
You're
it
just
out.
Mean.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, coming up next, we're under a month away from the resumption of the NBA season, and multiple teams are being forced to shut down their facilities, including one who has the best odds to win the whole damn thing should they actually play. What does that mean? We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2.
At the end of the day, this is going to be the toughest championship you could ever win.
The champion from this season, I think, is going to be more worthy and probably more special than any champion.
Whoever wants it more is going to be able to go out there and take it.
It's all about who wants it more, Trey.
I mean, that's the way it's worked for me. Whenever I've wanted something more, I've gotten it.
That was me yesterday. I'll tell you why in a sec. Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Yesterday, I got absolutely ambushed
by the ice cream man.
Man, So I'm sitting here. I've been house sitting at my parents, and this thing just comes and parks in front of the house. And Mr. Here? Softy is just blaring that sound. And I'm sitting there. I'm out in the deck, and I'm just sitting there, and it is not going anywhere. Like, you know, you can hear the sound kind of change distances as it goes away. It's just parked there. And in that situation, the ice cream man wanted it more. He wanted business more than I wanted self-control. And so he went out there. And so now I have to ask you a very important question. Yes. You've been to an ice cream truck once or twice in your day.
Many times.
Best treat.
You know, a lot of times I just go for the straight bomb pop.
See, the bomb pop is a classic. I think that has a rightful place at the throne.
Yeah, but you do what? The Choco Taco and all that kind of
stuff?
I
went for the Choco Taco. I think the Choco Taco because it's unique.
Yeah.
And I think anything that's got gumball eyes.
Gumball eyes?
Gumball eyes. So, like, I went like Sonic the Hedgehog. You'll see SpongeBob ones. You'll see, like, the baseball mitt that's got the gumball baseball.
So, the gumball eyes are you're intrigued?
I am very, CC, very intrigued.
All right. I would have gone for some sort of, like, vanilla chocolate thing, but the bomb pop was usually my go. Just give me a bomb.
You know what? At Golic and Wingo, best ice cream truck treat. Yeah. I want to hear because I think this is truly one of the things that like tells you a lot about the person that you're dealing with.
Ice cream sandwich, also very good.
A great one. The chocolate eclair bar, yes. Strawberry shortcake.
Ooh, strawberry. You know what?
Yeah, see?
That's a good call by you.
Speaking your language, Al.
Yeah, strawberry shortcake, you got to me because you're saying to yourself, it's a fruit, so you're okay.
I would love to see the words on the side and like the nutritional values of the strawberry shortcake.
So you're good.
It's a fruit with like the hands up emoji. Like, yeah, it's a fruit.
It's like carrot cake. You're eating a vegetable. Don't worry about it. You're fine.
Dear God.
It'll all be good. The question is, will it all be good as the NBA begins to restart the season and get going as the bubble is officially underway? Because we're still having all kinds of issues. Again, this week, 7th, 8th, and 9th, are when teams are going to travel down to Orlando. And we're still seeing some issues here, Junior, including a team that has the best odds to win it all had to shut down their facility.
Yeah, so the Bucks had to shut down their practice facility here. It's not immediately clear if there was more than one positive test for the Bucks, but they plan to keep the facility closed for workouts until they travel and depart on Thursday, sources told Adrian Wojnarowski. And remember, per the league's health and safety guidelines, any player who contracts the virus must quarantine and test negative twice before being medically cleared to make the trip to Orlando. So for this one with the Bucks, they're obviously trying to preserve, kind of like we talked about with the NFL in the preseason.
Yeah.
Just get to the bubble. Like,
just get there.
Being at the facility is great. It's a nice extra, but get to the bubble. So for more details on what's going to happen, Malika Andrews, who's going to join us later in the show, was on SportsCenter, our NBA reporter, talking about what's going to happen as players get ready to head down to Florida.
That memo essentially detailed what teams would go through to get players into Orlando that won't be able to fly with the team on the charter on their scheduled date. So why, for instance, in this memo, it says that a player wouldn't be able to make that trip is starting tomorrow for teams that are traveling on the 7th or 2 days before any team is scheduled to depart. If a player missed any coronavirus tests between those 2 days, they would not be able to make that trip. Or if they had some other extenuating circumstance that the league already knows about and was excused, then they would be able to go into this protocol. And what that protocol dictates is they have three options in order to travel to Orlando. They could travel commercially, they could travel in a private plane, or they could drive. If they travel in a private plane or by car, both which would be on their own dime, they would have to clear two negative tests upon arriving before continuing into basketball activities.
I mean, driving seems to be the most complicated way to do this, right? I mean, because you're stopping. If you're driving,
I think it depends on where you're coming from, because in theory, driving could be easier in all of this, because once you get in the car, if you're close enough to just drive straight there, you don't have to deal with rest stops. You don't have to deal with a connection if you're flying commercially in a lot of this. So there's not as much human interaction as any of the flying options would present you.
If you could just drive through straight.
You're
exactly right. So it depends on where you're coming from. And then there's the other thing. One member of the Sacramento Kings traveling party also tested positive for COVID-19, a source told The Undefeated. And the Kings similarly plan to keep their practice facility closed for the departure until the departure for Orlando on Wednesday.
That's the thing, is this sounds a lot like there was a show Making the Band on MTV where P. Diddy was on there trying to like create a band with a bunch of these artists he brought along, and he would shut down the studio like every other day for something that they had done in the course of that. And we've heard enough about these facilities closing down, whether it was Major League Baseball before, whether it's the NBA now and some of these teams. where you're kind of numb to it, kind of like the way you were. When P. Diddy can only come in so many times and say, I'm shutting down the studio, before you go, all right, unless they cancel the show here, I'm not really going to anticipate the worst case scenario in all this. Much the same, until we hear something like this coming from the actual NBA bubble, it all seems to be just mitigating risk in the lead up to this. We don't want a bunch of people contracting COVID coming into our facility, because the only goal for us is to get down to the bubble and then figure out how to operate there.
Right. It's actually a benefit in a weird way if they're testing positive now before they get to Orlando, because once they get inside the bubble and there's a positive test, then it becomes a much bigger deal.
Well, and if you, whatever you can do to prevent that right now, so not bringing people, sort of the same basic principle behind the NFL doctors saying, hey, players, don't work out together leading up to this, because we're trying to just get everybody there. And once we get everybody there, we'll assess it. We've got the protocols that we're all starting to agree on once we're inside the bubble, once we're back in NFL training camp, to go ahead and do that the way that we're prepared to, because the rest of this are things that they're learning on the fly that aren't going to be the norm. What you're doing as protocol inside your team's facility, not necessarily what's going to be expected of you once you get to the bubble.
Absolutely. And again, we're getting closer and closer. The next few days are the 3 days where the teams will be traveling down to Orlando. But coming up next, what's the cascading effect for the potential Washington name change in the NFL, and how Daniel Snyder maybe got to the point where he never thought he'd get to?